about State visiting the Pentagon, I assure you. Defense made a lopsided smile. And if I may ask exactly why have you come from the comforts of Foggy Bottom to grace my office? To what do I owe this honor? God, thought State, the world's coming to an end and he still can't get out a single sentence without all his flourishes. I want to see a couple of the people on your situation team. That analyst from the NIC and General Scheib. Defense's shaggy brows rose slightly. I'll get them up here right away. He pressed a button on his desktop intercom and gave the order. Then, steepling his fingers as he looked back at State, he asked, "Why those two?" State was surprised by the directness of his question. Then she thought, "He's trying to shock me into telling him the truth." It was her turn to smile now. "I need to be brought up to the minute on the missile crisis."
"Uh-huh."
"Phone links aren't good enough. I need to see the players face to face."
"I understand. They'll be here directly."
5 levels below the Secretary of Defense's office, General Scheib frowned at the young tech sergeant who had handed him the message. "The Secretary of Defense wants to see me in his office," Scheib announced to the team. Pointing down the table to Jamil, he added, "You too." Jamil looked shocked.
"Me?"
General Higgins grunted.
"It doesn't pay to cross the Secretary of State, kid. She's probably got the big brass upstairs boiling a pot of oil for you."
"But we can't go now," Jamil said. "The North Koreans will be launching those missiles any minute."
"Nothing you can do about that," Higgins said. "You just follow orders, like the rest of us."
Jamil got to his feet, looking uncertain, fearful. Zuri Coggins went to his side.
"I'll go with you," she said.
Scheib snapped. "The call was for him and me, nobody else." Eyes blazing, Coggins stood up to the general, even though she was barely the height of his chin.
"I represent the National Security Advisor. If there's going to be any boiling in oil, they'll have to do it in front of me."
Scheib actually took a step back from her. Then he shrugged and muttered,
"Okay.
You explain it to the secretary, then." As the three of them followed the tech sergeant toward the door, Higgins called after them,
"We'll try to keep the gooks from launching until after you get back."
No one laughed. No one even smiled. U.S. Route 12, Bitterroot Mountains, Idaho. Charlie had never been so cold and miserable in his whole blessed life. He hadn't gone more than 12 steps through the wet, fluffy snow before his shoes were soaked and his feet started to hurt like fire. Doggedly, he pushed on, heading back down the road toward the gas station he'd remembered seeing. The wind was in his face and cutting right through his polyester shell jacket. It was supposed to have a wool lining, but it felt like nothing more than tissue paper. Charlie tugged on the zipper. It was already as high as it could go. He mashed his Seattle Seahawks cap as far down on his head as he could, but his ears were exposed and tingling. Turning, he could barely make out the lines of the van stuck on the roadside.
"Come on, Charlie," he urged himself. "Get moving. The more you move, the warmer you'll feel. Get that old heart pumping."
Jamming his bare hands into the jacket's pockets, he mushed on, squinting against the snowflakes rushing against his face.
"It's only a couple of miles," he told himself. "I gotta get there before the van runs out of gas. Got to get there before Martha and the kids freeze. They shouldn't have blizzards like this in October," he raged to himself. "Those science people claim we're having global warming, for Lord's sake. This don't look like global warming to me."
Able One, cockpit.